Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads, and I have a lot of allergies going on right now, like really, really bad allergies. So I'll try not to sneeze, and I'll try to edit it out if I do sneeze, but there might be some noises that you don't want to hear. Let me see if I recorded these questions. Yes, I have a few questions that I forgot I had saved. And I want to talk about them. And then I want to talk about some recent purchases. This is episode 101 of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I also wanted to state that DC Spotlight has started on the DC Noise feed with me and Kyle again. We're going to be on a more regular schedule, try to do it every 2 weeks. So the first episode, we talked about No Justice. The second episode, we talked about Bendis Superman. So if you get a chance, go to DCNoisePodcast.com. And check out the episodes there, and you should see them on an every other week schedule now. I think the next episode we're going to be talking about Hawkman and Plastic Man. So make sure you tune in if you're interested in some DC coverage. So here's some questions that I had from Ross. He says, what Charlton character has had the largest impact since joining the DCU? Ooh, man, that's tough. There's three biggies, but as far as the biggest impact, because of his power set, I'd have to say Captain Atom. Plus his series, his solo series, it ran longer than Blue Beetle. And this is the Ted Kord Blue Beetle. I think if you might add up all the Blue Beetle titles with with Jaime or Jamie, you might end up with a longer run. But Captain Atom ran a long time. Plus, he appeared in Superman, Batman. He's had a power influence. He was a big part of Armageddon. As a matter of fact, he was supposedly going to be the villain of Armageddon 2001. As far as appearances, Blue Beetle, Ted Kord, appeared in a lot of books. I mean, he's in Justice League for a long time. And then he was in Justice League Task Force with him and Booster. And then he was in Justice League 3001. What else has he been in? He was in Birds of Prey for a while, where he got a little fatter and was going to have a heart attack. But as far as like impacting, I'd have to go with somebody like a bigger power set. And Captain Atom has had a couple of miniseries and stuff, an ongoing series in New 52 that focused on him. And he's always been the same guy. But if you go back and include other companies, I would say Blue Beetle, because he goes back to the Fox Comics. He goes back to Charlton. He goes back to several other publishers. And I'm sorry for my clearing of the throat. How much does who publishes a book play into whether you will buy it or not? These are good questions. Well, it's tough. I'm a fan of history and continuity and history of characters. So as much as it may hurt some people to say, I would prefer to stay in Marvel and DC and Valiant because I know a lot of history and I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to miss all the bad stuff. Whereas all the stuff in Image and stuff like that, those are short stories. And yeah, they might be a 5 out of 5, but there's no historical value. There's a good damn story. But if I had to cut back, It would be in this order of preference. I would cut Marvel first, and then I'd cut Valiant, and then cut DC, and DC would always be at the top. So I hope that answers your question. Unfortunately, I'm not limited to what I could buy, so I just buy everything. But if I did, the influence of the characters, not necessarily the creators, but the characters are what influences me to buy. And in case of DC, I want to know it all. Like, I want to know every single thing that happens to every single character, every character, C list, D list, Z list, new characters. So I'd sacrifice everything to stay in the DC realm. He then asks, and for his buddy Kirk, what are your top five war military titles? Sorry. Top five military titles. Okay, I'll go with Our Army at War. I'm not gonna say what they are in any particular order, other than I will say that Sergeant Rock and GI Combat are my favorite. The Haunted Tank specifically. But I'm gonna say Sergeant Rock is number one, number two is GI Combat, number three is Star Spangled Stories slash Unknown Soldier. Number four would be The Losers, and number five would be Black Hawks. So those are my top five military titles. You'll notice that all of them have a DC theme. I just started reading the Nom though, and it is really good. But if I had a choice, I would stick to the DC characters. Ross asks another good question. What percentage, ballpark, of your collection have you read? At this point, I would say with 65,000 comics plus a closet full of uncatalogued comic books, which may take me to 75,000. Although I don't think there's 10,000. I'd say there's about 5,000 in that closet. So maybe take me to 70,000. I think I've read about half, which is pretty damn good. Since I started getting almost everything in previews, it's been hard to keep up, but I like that library mentality. It makes me feel comfortable knowing that I don't have to go anywhere to try to find this damn book. I just go to my basement, find where it is, and pull it out and read it. Sometimes it is hard to find it, especially since the merging. I've gotten really behind in merging, but I sort of know where everything is. Kirk then says, current Kickstarters you're most excited for? I'm excited to read the Palmiotti one that just came out recently, the Amanda Connor cover. I don't even know the name. I purchased so much that I don't even know what I get anymore. But I will say that if it's a Palmiotti or Gray, those are my favorite Kickstarters. I feel like I get my value, and I get prints and extra things. I get things on time. Anything with Palmiotti or Gray, those are the ones that I really, really enjoy. The Golden Age of God, I can't remember. It's called Golden Age of Heroes, or it's about a bunch of Golden Age people that live in a trailer park. What I really like about that Kickstarter is the cost. Like, it's not ridiculously. It's like the cost of a regular comic book plus shipping. And I think a lot of these people take you. I mean, I know you're supporting them, but you could get like four comics, or maybe more, maybe six, for the cost of what they're asking for in shipping. So, there's a time when I stopped doing Kickstarters, and I sometimes come in and out, and I wouldn't have, I just went through a brash of buying a bunch of Kickstarters, but the intent of that is the only time I go to look at Kickstarters is when I have something to go look for. Like, I know there's something I want. And if I know there's something I want, I shop, which means I get, 4 to 5 books every time I go shopping. If I have no reason to go there, like a friend isn't doing something, like Metal Shark Bro, Bob Franz, I went in there to get that and ended up getting like 4 books. If there is not a Palmiotti email that says, "Hey, go support this," then I usually don't go buy it. I don't even go usually if like somebody says, "Check this out." Like I just don't, unless something really catches my eye, like artistically, or somebody says, "I supported this," and there's like some kind of something that links me to something that I really want, then I'll go check it out. And the reason I don't get too excited for them because they're so goddamn expensive. Like I try to choose Kickstarters that are not going to be in previews, because they cost too damn much. I mean, $25 for a single comic book, even if it's like 10, that's too much. That's like almost 3 comics, almost, for the cost of one, and then you add shipping, and that definitely is 3 comics, sometimes 4 comics. So I always think of that with Kickstarters. Kirk also asked, "Is Sergeant Rock the best, or is he the greatest?" I think he's, like I said, it's my number one war comic, Sergeant Rock in Easy Company. For some reason, I've always loved Ice Cream Soldier. I just, that's my shit right there. Have you read Coda from Boom? No, and I can't remember why I chose not to get that one. I think it was because it was in the realm of fantasy, and that is the one genre that I don't, unless it's somebody that I really love. And Simon Spurrier, I have loved some of his stuff, like Crossed and a couple of other things, but there's stuff I didn't like from Simon Spurrier. So I think that was it, the fact that it was fantasy and Simon Spurrier, I bailed out on that. I didn't order it. When you started pre-ordering in high school, who were you ordering from? I don't know how to answer that question, but I assume you're asking from a Diamond or Capital perspective, and the answer was both, because some publishers were at one distributor and some were at another distributor, so I had to get both catalogs and decide which one to order from, and then I'd let my comic shop know. And the comic shop that I was going to in high school that I had a pull list with was Tall Tales in Albuquerque. It was first called Nostalgia, and then it turned to Tall Tales Comics on, I think it was on Wyoming. Or I could take it, like, who did you order from? I ordered from Tall Tales. When I was going to Don's Paperback Books, I didn't have a pull list. I would just go whenever I could get a ride there, and we would and then I would just pull stuff off the rack. I didn't even know if they had a pull list. I'm sure they did. I just didn't ask at that time. And then from there I went to Doc's News, which I liked a lot. And I think that's what I ended up going back to Tall Tales because Doc's News was going out of business. So then I went back to Tall Tales, but I sometimes shopped at a place called the Comic Warehouse. and bought comics there, but I never had a pull list there. I kind of went there whenever I was in the area, or if I was missing an issue, I'd go look at it. And they had another shop across the university, and that's where I didn't have a pull list, but I would go there every Wednesday to make sure I didn't miss anything. Like, that's where I first discovered Valiant Comics, and I went was taking my engineering classes and went across, so I'd always get some comics, and I got my Archer and Armstrong from there, and that's when I started to go there a little more frequently and pull stuff that I missed out on. And then his last comment was Atari Force. Yeah, I love Atari Force. Drew asked, "We both enjoyed Die Die Die. Do you want more surprise comics on the shelf?" No, I kind of one of I kind of like the hunt for having to go do this. It's kind of exciting, but it's only exciting if I succeed in getting what I want. And so far, I've been able to get what I want. And what I mean by that is I've been able to go to Walmart and find the issues. And I don't mind, like, going for the hunt and going there and checking and going there and checking and going there and checking. I don't mind that. But if I ever fail, like when I was in Albuquerque and I went to four Walmarts and not one of them had a collector's section, that was frustrating as all hell. So I only want to get surprised if I could succeed in achieving my goal. That sounds weird, doesn't it? There's something nostalgic about not knowing or if you're going to get it, because that's the way the spinner rack was. But now that you've experienced pre-ordering and the fact that you can get it, it sucks if you can't get it because you're surprised and you're not limited by money. There's one that's a whole different story if you're saving for a house or whatever and you can't buy the comic, and but if you have the money and you can't find it and you don't want to pay an outrageous price because you can find these things on eBay, but then again you're in the Kickstarter world. You're paying $20 for a comic book for a single issue. That's fucking like ridiculous in my opinion. Especially if you could just pre-order it and get it for 50 or 40% off, you know? So that lasted a while. And the other thing I want to talk about is how bad Diamond is. They really have no quality control. Like, they really ship like Amazon. And if you ever order stuff from Amazon, they'll blow up some of those things and they'll throw your books in it and then hope the books don't get damaged. That's like what Diamond does. They put them in these holders where they stack, they're the two holder or the four holder, and they just stack them. And depending on how UPS moves these, like if they're like throwing them to each other and there's like slippage in the comics, like they're not tight, you'll get damages. And yes, they can report damages to Diamond, but it's devastating if a whole box is damaged and you have like a bunch of comics. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I went to the store and there was like, I only get my DC there, but there was like five comics that week, which is a lot, that were damaged. And it's likely that they get replacements, but in some cases they haven't. So I really inspect the damages and I say, can I live with this? And then I'll buy it if it's not too damaged. Because what they deem damaged, they want like at least a good, 9.0 or 8.5 at a minimum. But if it's beyond that, they want to get their money back or get a ship back. And the shop got a whole box that was destroyed, and it was a four loader, which means I can't imagine how many Marvel and Independence were damaged. And a lot of the damages were the Art Germ Fantastic Four covers, because there was like a stack of the thing that was just demolished because of shipping. I just wish they had the care and love that DCBS does for me, because I get my books shipped really nice. If they would put some kind of quality control, I think they would improve their relationships with the people that are buying the product, and then save money on having to reship a damaged product to the consumer or the retailer. So I've already been talking almost 30 minutes, but I wanted to go through a couple of my recent purchases. I was on Twitter the other day, and or maybe it was actually a month ago, and so I follow the Charlton homepage, and somebody was posting pictures of Scary Tales, and I was like, man, this woman on the cover, the hostess, looks beautiful. And I love the cover so much that I went and I said, I'm going to order 1, 2, and 3. Well, when DCBS shipped it to me, it couldn't find a number one. But I did get 2 and 3. But number one is the first appearance of Countess Von Blood, and she's kind of the hostess of the Scary Tales. So I got number 2 and 3, and I put number one on my want list, but it hasn't arrived yet. I then had on my these two. I was reading a story called The Odyssey of the Crimson Wasp from Now Comics of the Green Hornet. And I liked it so much. I think what happened is I got this Green Hornet comic from my father-in-law. He bought me like a mystery pack for Christmas. And then you open up the pack and you don't know what's in it. And it's just a random, like there was a Spawn comic and some weird stuff from some independent publishers I'd never even heard of. And there was a Green Hornet comic, and it was from Now. And I had a lot of this run, but not the whole thing. And this is the second volume from 1991. And I wanted to finish The Odyssey, and I never finished it. So this is part 2 and 3 of The Odyssey of the Crimson Wasp. It's issue 13 and 14 of The Green Hornet. I really like both covers too. It's really good. So I then completed The Demon. The longest running Demon was from the 1990 series. A lot of it was Alan Grant and Garth Ennis, and John McCrae drew a lot of it. They had a lot of good artists on it. And what this did, this purchase here was 52, and it was the only one I was missing in every single volume of the Demon. So now I own every single DC comic with the Demon in it, except for the Spanish ones or the ones from other countries. I do have one comic with the Demon in it. It's very interesting. I think it's from Mexico. It might be from Spain. It has Batman logo on the cover, and it's a Demon reprint. So it says like Batman, but it's the Demon. So it's an interesting comic from Spain that I don't know how I got it. It's probably the only, I think I have only one from Spain, and I have a couple of them from Iceland, or I can't remember if it's from Iceland or one of Barb's coworkers went to Iceland and bought some Disney comics for me, and of course I can't read them because I don't know the language, whatever they speak. But I do have some foreign comics that are in another language. If I had copious spare time, I would probably have time to learn the language and read the comic. I then purchased number 91 of the New Mutants, and it was a Liefeld comic book. Liefeld took over around the early 90s, or maybe it was 89 or 87 or something like that. And I owned all of them with the exception of 91 and the first appearance of Deadpool. And I've been holding off on the first appearance of Deadpool. because it's like $300. But maybe it's time to pull the plug. I don't know. And then on Geek Brunch, I went to go get, we said we're going to cover volume one of Harrow County. And I thought, hey, I ordered all of them. I'll go find it. Well, I found out that I was missing 4, 27, and 12 when I audited it. And then I checked my DCBS orders because you could search your entire history, and I never ordered them. So for whatever happened that month, I missed ordering Harrow County, and that's happened in the past. It's not done on purpose, it's by accident. It's just me skimming over a page and missing a title that I want to buy. So I was able to procure two of them, and I just need issue four, and I was able to read the comic issue four because I was able to go to Comixology and buy it, and so I can complete the story arc when we covered it on Geek Brunch. But knowing me, I have to have the physical copies, even though I've read it. It's just something that I'm a weird that way. Can't explain. It's not about the story. I think this episode I'm not gonna do a weekly reads. I'm just gonna talk because I have a lot to talk about. But maybe I'll do 1 week instead of two. Or maybe I'll marathon three on the next episode. But I have this weird mentality that if I enjoy something and I read it digitally, that I have to procure it. It's just one of those things. And this is one I bought digitally to try. Actually, everything that I decided to cut at that 1 month that I decided to cut comics, I added back in. So I failed miserably. Well, one of them was 12 Devils Dancing, and I've already read it digitally, but I had to have the physical copy. So I made a mycomicshop.com order. And then I bought that. The interesting thing about that is it's better to read it digitally. The reason is, for some reason, that copy digitally, number one, contains three issues. Well, so does the print copy, but the print copy is $5.99, whereas opposed, if you buy it digitally, it's only $2.99. I know that because I bought it digitally and now I have a physical copy. I then I'm working towards the completion of another dead universe, and there is a comic book called Target, and it was only three issues from Atlas Comics, and it was John Target, and it's spelled Targitt. Manstalker, but in the indices it's just called Target. So I got Target number two and number three. I already had number one that completed my comics for John Target Manstalker. I then completed The Brute because I had number one. I needed to buy issues two and three, and I did from 1975 Atlas. I then purchased one through three of Savage Combat Tales. And on the cover, it says Sergeant Stryker's Death Squad, but the title in the indices is just Savage Combat Tales from 1975, featuring Sergeant Stryker's Death Squad. So maybe if this series made it past three issues, or a year of publication, it would have contained another featuring someone. I then completed Iron Jaw because I had issues one and two, and I bought three and four. He's like a barbarian type guy with an iron jaw. Looks like Conan, sort of. Completed issues three and four. I then completed Cougar, which was just two issues. Yep, not much to say there from 1975. Two issues from the Cougar. Then I completed one of my favorites because of what it, the covers look fucking amazing. And one of them is Russ Heath. One of them's Neil Adams, and some of these covers are just phenomenal. We got Planet of Vampires, issues 1 through 3. I bought them all and completed that series from that universe. I then completed The Destructor. I bought 1, 2, and 4. I already had 3 in hand, so I completed that 4-issue miniseries. What else do we got? Did I talk about? I already talked about Gen 13. I'm trying to figure out. Okay, I bought some more Challengers because of the last purchase. What I was trying to get is all the 12-cent issues when it came back into publication. This series left and came back. It's been going on since 1958, but when it came back in the 60s, it went through from 67 to something, and I bought issue 67, which is a lovely cover. It's one of, I think it's Ace. No, it's not Rocky. It's the red-headed guy. Why am I blanking on his name? There's Prof, Rocky, Ace, and Red. Maybe his name is Red. I don't know. But he's shaking some guy who's in like some death contraption machine, and he's saying, "Wake up, Tino. You gotta wake up. If he dies in the nightmare, he's finished." And it's called the Dream Killers. We then have Challengers of the Unknown number 68. And this one's hard to tell who it is. Oh, it's the professor. And Red is coming in and he said, "Prof, you're out of your mind letting that thing out." And he's like opening the door to a monster. One of us is a madman. We then have Challengers of the Unknown 69. It says, "Prof is dead." It seems like in even the current arc, Prof was dying. So I don't know if he's like the guy that's always dying. "Prof is dying. This is the end of the Challengers." "Wrong. I'm your new challenger." And it has a woman there in the shadow. We have 72. This has the woman challenger who is named June, I believe. "We've got to find that cat. Its scratch can destroy you." And she's like, she just got scratched by the cat. We then have a Challengers cover where she's saying, "I hear you, I feel you, wherever you are, stay out of this room." And they're having a seance, and there's a monster in the background. And it says, "Curse of the Killer, Time Forgot." We then get to a more current issue, which was a 35 cent issue from 82, because this is another hiatus. It jumped from a 15 cent comic to a 35 cent comic. And, this was them getting attacked by some weird monster, and it says guest starring the Swamp Thing. This is the one issue I was missing in the arc that I just read. This monster's consuming Professor's body, and it's using us to kill it. So it might explain how he got infected. I then had a random purchase of the Fighting Five. The reason I bought this is because I wanted 41 and 42. They didn't have 42. The reason I wanted 42 of the Fighting Five is because it's the first appearance of the Peacemaker, and I wanted the story before just in case it contained anything that would tell that story. I am then working on all the Batman comics from 1973. I still got some holes, and I buy them short. I don't buy them. I could buy them all, but then I couldn't buy all the other stuff. And my focus is, well, I'll just get what I, a few issues here. The reason is Batman is more expensive. So you're looking at like a fine book of like, double digits and usually like $25 depending on the condition and the age of the book. I picked up Batman 294. It has a Joker and a faceless Batman as he pulls back the cowl and he says, "So long, Batman. This time I really rubbed you out. What a joke. Even in death, your secret identity is still a secret." And then we got the another Batman which has like these cult guys with X's on them and they're swinging blades at him. And this is Batman 298. We have Batman 313. The scarred side of the coin has come up. The Two-Face strikes again, twice as deadly before. And Two-Face is just sitting on a couch in his house, I guess, because this is a Garcia Lopez cover too. I just noticed that. Half the room is for the evil side of Two-Face, and then the other half of the room is like a wonderful-looking apartment. We then have Batman 317. This is a Riddler issue. It has Riddler on this crate that's being lifted by some kind of anchor on a boat, looks like. And he says, I pulled off the crime of the century, and it's too late for Batman to stop me. It's your favorite Bat villain back to try the Riddler's 1001 Clue Caper." So that is that. I need to go grab another stack of comics so I can finish this marathon. Oh, I also want to thank Martin for shipping out my physical copy of Cul-de-Sac. That came in the mail yesterday. I then bought Generation X. I've been reading this. I had some of these issues, and you could see by what I'm gonna go over, that I just missed a book here and there. I had 1 through 4, so I missed issue 5. I fixed that. I was missing issue 6, and then I picked up issue 16. So you could see I had from 7 to 15 already. I was buying it off the shelf, and then I got issue 17, 18, 19, and then I missed those issues, and then I had must have gotten 20, 21, and 22, because then I jumped to 23. I purchased 23. 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, and then I jumped to 33, and then I also missed I had a Challenger 66 in there that I forgot to mention, which has like a bunch of monsters have a kid on a chair and looks like they're gonna murder him, and the Challengers are coming running to try to save the kid. So that's Generation X. And then last but not least, I gotta feed Harley, so I'm gonna be wrapping this one up, at least the first part of this. Also want to thank Martin, because he sent me a Will P Payton print of Harlequin, and it's a really nice print. So thank you, Martin. That was a surprise that came with the cul-de-sac issue. So then the Spawn I picked up, this is from, you can remember what I picked up from the last issues. I picked up through 60. I almost read them all. I think I need to read 59 and 60. But I picked up 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75, 76. I had to order 77 online because it was cheaper on eBay. And then I got 79 and then 81. And then I start getting into the area where I started getting it again. So I left Spawn, came back, got a lot of them. And that's when I need to get up into the closet and see how many Spawn I have to make sure I don't repurchase any, but I'm really close to finishing Spawn. Spawn and Gen 13. Gen 13 is the other one that I was focusing on. And I don't know if I talked about that yet. Yeah, I think I talked about that in the last purchase. So I'm not going to go over that again. But, I'm getting close, and after Spawn, at least in the image area, I'm probably going to look to complete Sam and Twitch. And I have most of that series except for the tail end of about 8 issues, and I need to buy those. The other thing I need to buy is Curse of Spawn. I have a lot of Hell Spawn, but not the full run, so I'd like to complete all of those that are in that realm. On the Todd McFarlane side of his publications, even though he's not in all of those. It is his property, and I want to continue reading them. Got some Bendis on the Salmon Twitch. Should be interesting, and I read most of it already. So I want to thank you for listening, and I might be back with 1 week's worth of Mike M's weekly reads, and I will talk to you again very soon. One other thing I want to talk about. See, I just ramble. I got about 2 minutes. I got to feed Harley, and then Barb comes back from yoga. I just read Fantastic Four number one, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, I thought the dialogue was spot on. I thought the characterization of the Torch and Ben, as one of them, is really frustrated about not being able to get a hold of Sue and Reed and the kids. The other one is kind of given up. And the Fantastic Four single goes up, and Ben is there with Alicia, and he's like, I'm not going to answer it. It's not them. It's not them. And Johnny gets excited, and he's like, flame on! You know, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to go find out where Reed and Sue, and they're going to be there. It turns out to be a prank from the Yancey Street boys, and they had broken into Thing's apartment and take some of his personal. One was the Fantastic Four flare gun, and they sent it off. But really emotional. And then the thing is like Thing is he proposes to Alicia. He's like, let's get married. And he's like, who do I want to be my best man? He goes to the Torch and he's like, we have some good news for you. And you got to remember that Torch had married Alicia when Alicia was a Skrull. It wasn't really Alicia. But he goes there and he's like, I want you to be the best man. And you think the Torch would start crying and say, you know, I'm there for you, brother. We've been through so much together. I'm going to be your best man. But he flips out and he says, you're giving up on Reed. Reed should be your best man. Reed's not dead. He should be your best man, Ben. And Ben's like, fucking, you know, he's not coming back. It's like heartbreaking and emotional. He's not coming back. But then the thing at the end was really amazing because Reed, wherever he is with Sue and the two kids, manages to shoot out a thing through space with a Fantastic Four symbol. And the way it was launched, Thing, you know, they kind of looked at the sky and said, I think they're there. I think they're alive. Really emotional. And then you get to the Doctor Doom stuff, which is amazing. Because you got to remember that Latverians love Doctor Doom, at least true Latverians. Well, this woman goes to the castle and she almost gets killed by whoever's in charge of the country now, and she pleads upon finding real Doom, and Doom is there, and he puts on his mask again. You know, he's like, I'm a monster, but he puts on his mask and she says, you're our savior kind of thing. And really cool sequence with that. And then Scott Young, I think it was really smart, he did a one-page comic satire of how the entire Fantastic Four was not in FF1, even though they are, even though Reed and Sue appear in a couple panels. It kind of pokes fun of that, and that's kind of cool. I liked it. I thought this book was 5 out of 5. I was in tears reading it. I felt very emotional. It's exactly what I want. I was kind of skeptical. I was cautiously optimistic, people like to use about Dan Slott taking over, and I have no doubt in my mind after reading that first issue that he is a writer that I think is gonna make me happy with the FF, and the art was spot on. So I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and I will talk to you again in a bit when I come back with 1 week's worth of Mike M's Weekly Reads. All right, now we're back with Mike M's Weekly Reads, and this was close to Christmas time of last year. So this was December 18th through December 24th. You think I would have read a lot that week, but it was only 26 comics. We had one Valiant, one Titan, 12 Marvel, two Image, 9 DC, one Black Mask. So Let's start at the bottom with the 3 out of 5s. At the bottom, we had Super Sons Annual number 1. This was the Super Son Super Pets reunite to go after an alien who's kidnapping animals. So it's focusing on the super, like Crypto and Ace, the Bad Hound, and Comet, the horse, and all the different Streaky. Those are the ones I can name off the top of my head. I even think they had Martian Manhunter's little alien monster, but I don't remember. I thought it was fun, but it was I liked it just at that level. We then have all new Guardians of the Galaxy 9 through 10. The Gardener has contaminated Groot. Rocket wants revenge, but Gamora convinces them they have to go after the Soul Stone. The Collector and Grandmaster agree. So you think I'd rate this one higher because it's got the Elders of the Universe, but I guess for some reason I didn't. This sounds fantastic, but if for those of you who were wondering why Groot can talk now, it's because of these issues. The Gardener ends up healing Groot, and well, I don't know if you could call it healing, but that's why he's not saying "I am Groot," for those of you who are current with like Infinity War. We then get into the 4 out of 5s. We have Supergirl Annual number 1 and 12 through 14. This is versus the Fatal Five, and it's pretty cool. Emerald Empress story. It has Magog, Selina, and Solomon Grundy and Indigo. I really enjoyed that. She manages to defeat them, but is outed to the public about saving Cyborg Superman, her father. And you got to remember, he's killed people and such, so she's not in favor by that. That is weird that they made her father Cyborg Superman, but you also got to consider this is the new 52 universe, which isn't the same as the universe that was before Flashpoint. Then there is a two-part story with the new Superman as they fight Red Rocket. Rocket Red, whatever you want to say. That was at the 4 out of 5s. We then have Ninjak number 0. It's an adventure with Ninjak and also a recap of his love life. It was very enjoyable, but Valiant usually, very seldom do I have a 3 out of 5 in Valiant. It's usually a 4 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5. A1 number 2. This is the Titan crossover we talked a little bit about. This has Alice Saga continues as the Monroe woman wants flying monkeys created. So it's got like a Oz spin to it. The spy thriller versus a clown as they lose another Monday. This is when they have characters like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they lost Monday. Finally, a survivor for the experiments to create a super soldier. That's the final story arc. It was anthology, if you will, from Titan Comics. We then have Batman number 37. This is Date Night with Superman and Lois. At a superhero dress-up carnival, Batman goes as Superman and Lois as Catwoman and vice versa. It was a fun issue. It's weird though that the marriage, you know, they had all this build-up and then they weren't going to invite anybody. Grave Diggers Union number 1 and 2. The union is formed to destroy monsters. When they realize the monsters are becoming stronger and stronger, they seek the help of a witch who was once rich until she went against the Dark Gods organization. Meanwhile, a Cthulhu monster is becoming more and more powerful. If I remember correctly, I didn't order this one, and I picked number 1 and 2 off the shelf, and I enjoyed it, so I started buying it or pre-ordering it. We have Batgirl number 17. The Red Queen takes over Nightwing, but Barbara is able to bring him back so they can defeat the Red Queen. She hates them for what happened to her sister. That's the Red Queen hates those two for what happened to her sister. We then have Marvel Knights 4, number 7 and 8. This was the conclusion to the Alien Camping story as Sue and Ben rescue Reed and the others from Aliens. Namor shows up and Sue. In Sue's class, she's actually teaching and asks her to talk. He wants to take her away from poverty and blames Reed. This was good shit, man. Reed shows up and they fight until the torch is called in his fire department job to look for a boy who may have drowned. Namor, Torch, and Reed find the boy's dead body and take it back to the mother. So it ended up kind of like a lighthearted, fight between Reed and Namor, and then turned really dark with the death of a character. But this is a really good story because it's when the FF were brought into poverty and Sue had to become a teacher. Reed was trying to find a job. I think Ben was working construction and the Torch was become a firefighter. So it was very interesting. We then have Wacky Raceland number 6. This was the finale to the story. The announcer and person behind the race is the professor's wife. And she's just a brain. The professor united them to take her down. At the end, part of her brain remained and was attached to the professor. And the professor is one of the guys that's actually part of the race, if you're wondering when I say professor. We have Action Comics 992. Superman tries to find out more about Jor-El from the Green Lanterns and by using the cosmic treadmill to see if he re is really evil. Lois covers for him at the Daily Planet. And this plays a really big part into Bendis' Superman, so pay attention to that. We have Grave Trancers number 1. This is from Black Mask. Very good comic. This was a 5 out of 5. We got into the 5 out of 5s. There was only one that week. A brother and sister go visit their father's grave in the middle of the night in a very creepy cemetery, only to be captured by a very creepy family that is actually torturing them. Yeah, it was really creepy. Very good. So we're going to go over one more week, and it looks like there's only a few books, but they're all like sequential, so it's a lot of books. I read a to This was Christmas week. It was Christmas through the end of the year, and I wasn't working, so I read 62 comics, 17 Marvel, 1 Image, and 44 DC. A lot of these were on the iPad. Because I didn't take a lot of physical books with me. We had Superman 23 and 25. This is Manchester Black and the Elite storyline. These ones I did take as physical copies. This was an enjoyable but weird, so hard to explain. But he was behind the chain, behind trying to change Jonathan, his son. At one point, we are set to believe Lois may have lost her leg. That was weird. This arc was really weird. And I usually really love Manchester Black, so this was a 4 out of 5, but man, it just held on just because of what it was. But it was very confusing, at least to me personally. I reread, I bought digitally Convergence, and I reread 0 through 8. Brainiac spawns the multiverse with Telos. And the Earth 2 heroes try to defeat Deimos, who's the warlord villain, with the help of their heroes from the timeline. The Flashpoint and Kingdom Come heroes are working with Deimos. Parallax takes out Deimos, and Brainiac puts everything back, but has to kill the Flash and Supergirl again to keep the main crisis in alignment. And if you remember the first crisis, Crisis on Infinite Earth, you had the death of the Flash and the death of Supergirl. Deimos was using the Time Heroes. Some of them battle back on Skitaris. Batman dies, and the Earth 2 Nightwing may take his mantle. It reintroduces the Infinity Wildcat. And what I mean by the Infinity, it's the Infinity Inc. From the 80s. And she is reconnected with the Red. So she's reconnected with the same thing that powers Animal Man. I really enjoyed Convergence. I think it was fun. I think it suffered from having so many teams working on the tie-ins and having to be repetitive. But other than the repetition of having to describe the situation and why the cities were in bubbles and everybody was segmented, having to explain that over and over again in every title, and then following kind of a similar pattern, it was a very entertaining story. And that was to bridge, if I remember correctly, New 52 to DCU, which is YOU, which then became Rebirth. So they were already planning Rebirth, I believe, and DCU was kind of the bridge with Convergence, if I remember correctly. I then wed. I sound like Waskily Wabbit, Elmer Fudd. Action Comics 993. Superman goes back to Krypton with the cosmic treadmill, and Booster follows while trying to prevent him from making a huge mistake. And this is interesting because I'm just starting to read it now to catch up to 1000, even though I've started reading the Bendis one. And they're still on Booster, so it just goes to show how long that arc lasted. We have a sensational She-Hulk 4 through 8. She's intro to her new job as with the district attorney's office where Blonde Phantom works, and Blonde Phantom was a Golden Age Marvel character. She versus Dr. Bong in a cartoon world, a story with Razorback and Interstellar Truckers involving US-1. And if you remember from the 80s, 90s, US-1 was a truck-driving comic book around the same time as Team America. Some weird comics, but they were awesome. Teams up with Saint Nick to take down an Aussie killer in the last story. And what I mean Saint Nick is Santa Claus, so. Sensational She-Hulk by John Byrne. We have Superman 26 through 36. Superman tries to teach Superboy lessons that his father taught him. Also a travel story where the Kents go visit all the military memorial sites and teach Jonathan, about sacrifice and loss. And it has a two-point story arc where Superman became possessed by Parallax and fights Sinestro. It looks like we're going to get a thunderstorm, so if I lose power, you know what happened. I better hit save because I just calculated things. So, save. Superman does not come to help. Wait. Two-part story arc where Superman became possessed by Parallax and fights Sinestro. The two-part story where Lois interviews Deathstroke and then goes after her. So Deathstroke goes after her. A four-part arc where Lex asks Superman's help as he is taken to Apocalypse. Superman does not come to help because he thinks it is the boy who cried wolf kind of thing. And they free Apocalypse in Darkseid's absence. Luthor feels betrayed and rips the S off his chest. Superman says he'll return to help on Apocalypse if needed. Lois and John were there on Apocalypse as well. So it's a very good Superman arc. We had Sacred Creatures, number 2, from Image Comics. The immortal beings trying to manipulate a major character turn out to be the seven deadly sins. He murders the warden. A priest is working with our main character to try and save those remaining. So you got the seven deadly sins that are manipulating this like guy in his 20s, and it's a pretty doggone interesting story. And one thing I will say about Sacred Creatures is it's a dense read, and it is well worth the money. It's really thick. I think it's $4.99, maybe $5.99, but it is a really thick Image comic. We then have DC Universe Presents number 1 through 8. I read this digitally. This is my second read. So I did a lot of second reads on the DC Universe Presents and also on Convergence. So this is the Dead Man questions why he exists and why Ramakrishna is controlling him and why he remembers all those bodies he goes into. He finds the librarian, which leads him to the Fallen One at the circus and the adventure. He knows his purpose and is able to remember or keep those he possesses in his brain. And then the other story that's in these is the Challengers reality TV show. To the death of many of them, searching the various artifacts, and Ace becoming possessed. Story kind of open-ended and says like to be continued. This reality TV show version of the Challengers was Dan DiDio, really awesome. And now that I'm reading like some back issues of Challengers of the Unknown. I got into Challengers because of Dead Man, so Dead Man was in Challengers, so it's interesting that when New 52 launched, they went to the 70s kind of, and 70s/80s, where they were in the same book and put it in Marvel Presents. You know, we had the Dead Man story first, and then the Challengers. This is really interesting. I wouldn't have known that if I didn't go down the Dead Man rabbit hole. The Spectre Volume 3, 1 through 12, one of my favorite series from Tom Ostrander, John Ostrander, and Tom Mandrake. The Spectre tries to save a love interest, Amy Biederman, from an HIV killer. This was a big story back in then because it tackled HIV, and at this time, HIV was very scary. I mean, people were worried about, like, getting it cut, like if they were playing sports, getting cut, and then the blood going into the other person and getting sick. Because this, you know, Magic Johnson was playing still with HIV and stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, scary things that people were terrified of. And it plays into this story. The cop is in love with this Amy Biederman so much, but is so scared of touching her because of the HIV. Madame Xanadu tries to take over Spectre's body at some point, and Amy dies, and it's very tragic. Very good story. We then get into, and the 5 out of 5 started with DC Universe Presents, by the way. And so the Spectre 1 through 12 was a reread. And then we get into another reread. So during Christmas, I did a lot of rereading. I reread She-Hulk, Superman, DC Universe Presents, The Spectre, Defenders, everything except for Superman Action was pretty much all old stuff that I've already read. Defenders 27 through 38. This is the conclusion to the Badoon arc with the Guardians of the Galaxy, which introduces Starhawk. The Headmen switch Nighthawk's brain with Khondu, the Mystic. That's the bird-like bald guy of the Headmen. It's an intro into Ruby Thursday, who's just her head is like a red crystal ball. She's part of the Headmen too. Doctor Strange puts Xandu into a Bambi deer that Hulk is taking care of, and Valkyrie husband into Nighthawk's body until they can recover his brain. They get assistance from the Red Guardian, who puts Kyle's brain back. The Headmen get away. The fight, they fight, they fight Plant Man as he's trying to ransom Kyle's brain for money. They fight Nebulon, who says he wants to save humanity but creates these bozo counterparts of people. It sounds bizarre, but it's fucking awesome. It is fucking awesome. They defeat Eel, Plant Man, and Porcupine. So that was Defenders 27 through 38. So let's just go over the 5 out of 5s again. We had DC Universe Presents 1 through 8 from the New 52 reread. We had The Spectre Volume 3, 1 through 12 reread from DC Comics. We had Defenders 27 through 38 reread. All 5 out of 5s, all reread, and I still love it. And then the last one from the previous week was Grave Trancers, which was a new book from Black Mask. Those were the 5 out of 5s. I hope you enjoyed listening to these Christmas books that I chose to read during the break. And it looks like I'm hitting 2018 next month. Or actually, next week. What am I talking about? Unless I take a month break, which I can see myself catching up. You know, like if I do 2 weeks, and I do 4 weeks, in a matter of no time, I'll be caught up if I keep doing this pattern. So I wanna try to do this and then be caught up, and then the show is gonna kind of be more concurrent with what I'm reading, and more topic driven. So I want to thank you for listening. You can reach me at geekbrunchpodcast.com. That's the website. You can go to Facebook and type in Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button, and follow all the episode threads there. I am on Twitter. That's the best way to get a hold of me because that's what I check the most. At Mike Myers Brunch, and that's Myers for Myers. And on email, if you want to send it an email, it's mike@comicbooknoise.com. I want to thank those that sent me questions. They keep the show alive. I'm going to be needing some more. So you can send it via email or Twitter at any time. And I'll also put out requests, but if you're proactive, I will get it. Leave an iTunes review if you can under Geek Brunch Podcast, and I would appreciate it if you have access to that. Or you another way to reward the show, if you like listening to this show a lot, is to like it on Twitter and also retweet it. That way all your followers can see the show and maybe help support the show or get more listeners. So that's ways you can help support the show. The other way you could do it is you could send Derek Howard money from Comic Book Noise. You can go to his Patreon and do it that way, or to go to the website and do a donate, because he's the one that pays for all of this infrastructure for Geek Brunch and DC Noise, which is very much appreciated. And if it wasn't for him, I would not have been podcasting. I think it's going on 11 or 12 years. So thank you again, and we'll talk to you very soon. Take it easy. Bye.